Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Wednesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Coming up on the show, a recap of Game 1 from the NBA's Eastern Conference Final, a preview of Game 1 from the West, and we get ready for the NHL, plus some CFL and boxing talk to round out the show today. So it's going to be a busy one. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Let's get into it and start talking some basketball. The Boston Celtics survive a scare in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final as they win in overtime over the Indiana Pacers. And there is a lot to go over from this game. But I think the biggest standpoint to me, the thing that stood out the most from a Celtics standpoint, and we will start with the Celtics here, was how good Jaylen Brown was. And I will admit, I don't view the Jays, Brown and Tatum, as 1A, 1B. I view Boston as Tatum and everyone else. And the everyone else is very, very good, but I do kind of put Brown in there. Now, he is a step above White, Holiday, Horford, and those guys, but I still don't view him on the same level as Tatum. But he was excellent. He stepped up on both ends of the floor in this game. And if Boston is ever going to have to move that contract to try to make things a little bit more tenable there, from a salary cap standpoint or from a team building standpoint, this is going to be the type of game that they point to me and say, like, he can be worth this sort of money. Offensively, he stepped up. Obviously, the big three late. But even leading up to it, he made some strong plays defensively as well, which I do really think is a bit more of his bread and butter. He was a real leader in this game for the Celtics. And we'll talk about Tatum in a second, but there was, I think, a pretty clear focus on trying to not have Tatum beat them in game one. And I think Jaylen Brown really made them pay. And when he is going in that way, this is just such a difficult team to really stop. Like, he, his presence as an elite player, and he can, I do think elite player is in the range for him. I don't think he consistently gets to that high level, and so that's why you can't put him in there on a, like, just categorize him as an elite player in general, but he has elite player tendencies, let's say, and if he can turn into that elite player in this series, there's just no beating these guys. So Jaylen Brown was massive in game one. And Tatum came up big when they needed it. I believe I saw 11 points in overtime. And like I said before, there was clearly a focus on him to kind of slow him down a little bit. And they turned him into a bit more of a jump shooter. And that is not his strength. I heard Bill Simmons talking about this a few weeks ago, where I don't know if Tatum is as good of a three-point shooter as Tatum thinks he's as a three-point shooter. He is much more effective when he is driving, getting to the rim, using that size and athleticism advantage that he has on almost anyone that is guarding him, and being able to attack that way. And he is good enough that he can hit threes when the situation calls for it, and when he is left wide freaking open. But this was not the dominant Tatum game that we have seen in playoffs past, but this was, I still think, a strong game for Jason Tatum. And the other part of this one that I think was really important was Drew Holiday was really big. Sorry, I have a cat with me. Say hi, Shiloh.
Hi, Shiloh.
Anyway, Drew Holiday, I thought really showed in this game why the Pacers got him. He comes up with some key defensive plays. They put him on Siakam at times, or he ends up on Siakam at times, I should say, and he's able to hold his own defensively, and offensively he put up some pretty big numbers in this game as well. And when he is going like that, this team is just really tough to beat. But they're also tough to beat when you beat yourselves. And that is something that the Indiana Pacers struggled with in this game. And this really was, and they talked about it after, this was the difference between a team that has been to 6 of the last 8 Eastern Conference Finals and a team that hasn't been to any in the last 10 years. So you could really see the experience, and you could really see the moment kind of get to the Indiana Pacers here, with some brutal turnovers late, some difficult decisions that didn't necessarily go their way. They really showed their inexperience in this game. And this is going to feel really disappointing, I think, for them, because I feel like this was probably their best chance. It is much like the J.R. Smith dribbling the ball out when the game is tied, and the LeBron meme. Because he knew how big of a chance that was for the Cavs in that series against Golden State, and then the Warriors come out and just beat the hell out of them. That kind of feels like it here, where the Pacers are, I think, so clearly the second best team in this series and needing kind of all the help they can get. And they played really, really good basketball for about 45 minutes of this game, and then it just all falls apart. But that's the frustration. They needed this one. This is basically now they're going to have to beat Boston 5 times, and most people don't think they can beat them twice. So I just feel like this is a gigantic missed opportunity for the Pacers. And you can say, like, look, they showed up, and they did. We'll talk about that in a second. They played a hell of a basketball game, but their inability to close is really going to haunt them, because I just don't think they get this many good looks at the Boston Celtics going forward. But again, they showed up. Haliburton was tremendous. Whatever leg, foot problems he had in the midway part of the season that I think did kind of hobble him down the stretch, they are gone now. This is a player that is showing why he should be one of the top in the league, why he should be going to the Olympics this summer, representing the United States. He is a real star in this league, and I thought in this game, again, for about 45 minutes, he was the leader that they needed him to be. Some of the mistakes aside, they still had a chance in a tie game to go out and win this one. They had the ball with 5.7 seconds left. I hated that last possession where it looked like he was ready to just dribble up, wait, ISO three, and then he's like, oh, I should kind of go. Oh, it's kind of blocked off for me to go, and then it was too late. And it's really frustrating because the Pacers, when they are going, they have such great ball movement, and every team in the league does this, where, all right, we've moved the ball really well, we scored 117 points, everything's great offensively, so let's change everything we do and put it all in one guy's hands in an ISO. This team thrives on ball movement and creating chaos for the defense, and it's tough to do that in 5 seconds, but it's not impossible to do that. You can at least have one, probably two passes in that time and create a good look. All they needed to do was get that ball going toward the rim, and they just didn't do it. So that was really frustrating. But the other piece that I thought stepped up here for the Pacers was Miles Turner. And we talked about him as an X factor in this series in the preview show yesterday. He was on fire, especially in that first half, and he is a real matchup problem for the Celtics. His ability to stretch the floor is a real weapon. His ability to attack, he's not like Tatum or LeBron or any of those guys when he's getting downhill. He's not going to beat you off the dribble, but you can set up some plays for him where he can really attack from the outside in. And Boston just doesn't really have anyone who can really limit him in that way. And so I do think that he is going to have his say in a few more of these games. But overall, the Pacers have nothing to feel overly upset about with how they played, but bigger picture, this feels like a real big missed opportunity, and the survival instincts of the Boston Celtics take over in this one. That is the Eastern Conference Final. Out west, it is the Dallas Mavericks and Minnesota Timberwolves tipping off in such an interesting series. The defensive matchup in this are a really, really fun part of it. I would bet Ant wants to get to take on Luka. Edwards has been such a defensive beast, and if there is any way to limit Luka Doncic, then this is probably going to be a very quick series. But also, if Luka is able to kind of dummy one of the better defensive players on the team and one of the better defensive players in the league, then all of a sudden it really shifts in the Mavericks' way. So that is such a fascinating one to watch. And the Mavericks' deadline additions come up in a big time way. I talked about this in the NHL, where a couple of teams felt like they were a move short. The Dallas Mavericks kind of overdid it at the deadline, getting Gafford, getting Washington, and now they are set up really well in this playoffs. If they don't have either of those guys, A, they don't make it to this point, and B, the Timberwolves just absolutely steamroll these guys. But with those two, they now have the size that I think they're going to be able to keep up with Minnesota. The other interesting part of this is the Rudy Gobert aspect of it. Minnesota much prefers Gobert to just kind of be able to roam a little bit, and they're going to want that with Luka's amazing passing ability and his ability to get into the paint as well. And so I do think Dallas not having Kleber at their disposal, it stings a little bit, because then you could just go five out and you have Gobert be really limited, and some of those situations that have come up in the past, specifically with him in Utah, where you can kind of play him off the floor, those come up again. Gafford and Likely don't really give you that, but they give you a good enough post presence that he is going to have to watch those guys. And so if Dallas is able to get into a spot where Gafford can get caught out of position time and time again, then they are really going to be successful. And so this chess match of how you can kind of get try to get Gobert to play himself out of this series, but also still be true to what you're doing offensively is fascinating to me. And the Karl-Anthony Towns aspect of this is fascinating because they have guys who can go right at him, and he has shown to be foul prone at times. So it's so fascinating, all the different matchups that could pop out in this one. I do favor the Mavericks in this series, but it is going to be a long series. It is going to be a battle, and it's going to be so interesting. Minnesota built themselves to beat the Denver Nuggets, and now you look at some of the matchups with Dallas, and it's like, I kind of like the Mavs there. All right, I kind of like the Mavs in that spot, too. It's going to be a really, really fun next round here for the Western Conference Final. We are also into the Final Four in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it begins tonight out east with the Rangers and the Panthers. Let's tee that one up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Probably two of the best teams, definitely two of the best teams in the NHL face off tonight in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final, as it is the Rangers taking on the Florida Panthers. There is so much high-level talent in this series. This is just going to be an absolute joy to watch. You look at this Rangers team. They beat the Hurricanes, but I think there is pretty significant room for improvement here. I did not like what I saw from the Rangers defensively against Carolina. Shesterkin was tremendous, but the Rangers are at 47.25% expected goals for in the postseason so far, and that is 12th of the 16 playoff teams in this year's playoff field. That is just simply not good enough. Carolina obviously has a lot of high-end talent, but Florida has a lot of guys who can really thrive in those high danger areas that the Rangers seem to be giving up. And so it's one thing to be giving up those looks to like Nikash. It's another to be giving them up to Tkachuk and Bennett and Barkov and all of those sorts of players. So the Rangers are going to absolutely have to step up in those ways defensively to limit the Florida Panthers, because they didn't do that against Carolina and they got away with it. But I thought Carolina was the better team in most of those games. The Rangers are going to have to step up now in this series. But the good thing for them is they can match the Florida Panthers' depth. Florida is a really deep team up front. The Rangers can, I think, match that. When you've seen how well Lafreniere has been playing in this postseason, that has been a huge boost to the depth of this team and has been able to really allow this Rangers club to cause some matchup problems for the opposition. And his breakout has been important. And now they get Hedl back. We'll see how much of a factor he can play in this series. But if he's anything at all, then this is a difficult team to defend. And we've seen at different times, too, guys like Vesey have stepped up for the Rangers in a fourth line role. And so that this depth for the Rangers, I think, is going to cause some real problems for the Florida Panthers. And so that's going to be an interesting part of the chess match. But another aspect of it here for the Rangers, they need their best players to step up. Like, we have seen Trocheck has been really good. Kreider has been phenomenal. Zibanejad has been really, really good. I just mentioned Lafreniere. He has been great. Obviously, Shesterkin has been tremendous and has been their clear-cut Conn Smythe favorite if the Rangers go on and win the damn thing. But Panarin has been okay. And Fox hasn't really seemed right since he took that knee-on-knee hit. Those two guys, I think, need to be great for the Rangers to win this series. On the Florida side, I think the X factor in this is Sergei Bobrovsky. He is so talented, but he can lose it a little bit. He is going up against one of the best goalies on the planet right now in Shesterkin, who just doesn't seem to really make those backbreaking mistakes. Bobrovsky can't do that in the way that Anderson was so good until one would squeak through and it would come at just the absolute worst possible time, whether it was game one or game six. Some of those that he missed were just backbreakers, and Florida cannot afford to have Bobrovsky make those same types of mistakes. I am so interested to see how this series goes. I am so excited to see some high quality hockey from this series. I'm going Panthers in seven, but obviously I don't feel overly confident about that. So while the NBA and NHL seasons are winding down, the CFL is just about to get going. It's time to continue our CFL preview for the 2024 season. Continuing our look at the Canadian Football League leading up to the start of the season in a couple of weeks, I was going to say spring training. I guess technically that could be true still, but preseason games are underway already, and so I thought today we'll continue the preview by looking at the most talented teams in the CFL. A lot of times I do a top five. That seems a bit excessive in a nine-team league, so we're going to go the top three most talented teams in the Canadian Football League right now. At three, I have the Montreal Alouettes. You have to put the defending Grey Cup champions on here a little bit, but my only question around this team talent-wise was Cody Fajardo. After struggling with injuries and inconsistency in Saskatchewan, Fajardo came up with the playoffs of his life, and I do think there are times where you see someone do that in a championship and or a championship atmosphere, whether it is the title game or the East final or anything like that, and they get a bump out of it and they just kind of stay at that level. Think of guys like Siakam and Fred VanVleet from the Toronto Raptors days. Think of, again, basketball, but like a KCP with his time with the Lakers and what he has been able to do now with the Denver Nuggets. Sometimes guys elevate and they just stay elevated. And I do wonder if we get that from Cody Fajardo. If he is that guy, then this is truly one of the most talented teams in the league. At two, it's Toronto. They were the undisputed number one a year ago, but Chad Kelly has been just dreadful as a person. And he's not going to play for the first half of the season. And they lost a lot in free agency as well. So I still think this is a really, really talented team, but they have lost a bit of that high-end talent, and they're going to need some depth pieces now to step up in Toronto. But I still think because of the work they've done in free agency's past, this is still one of the most talented teams in the league. And at number one, I have BC. I still love Vernon Adams. They lost a little bit in free agency, but no one really, I thought, took a real jump in free agency. Aside, like Ottawa, I think, had the best offseason, and they're not moving from 9-1 on this list. So I have BC with the weapons that they are able to throw out there on offense, with the strength of this defense as well. I just think that all over the football field, there is high-end talent, and so that's why I have the BC Lions as the most talented team in the Canadian Football League heading into the 2024 season. The boxing world focused on Saudi Arabia last weekend as Oleksandr Usyk unified the heavyweight championship, moving up from cruiserweight to be the heavyweight king. But is he the pound-for-pound king? It is now time to unveil the Couch Potato Diary men's boxing pound-for-pound rankings. Pound-for-pound rankings are always so much fun to put together, and we have our top 10 here for the Couch Potato Diary boxing pound-for-pound rankings coming off of so much great fights and now leading into so many more. We'll start at 10, Teofimo Lopez. I feel like he's been left off of a few unnecessarily. I still think this is someone who has an incredible resume, is still incredibly talented, and has really bounced back since a loss to Kambosos a few years ago. So I have him at 10. At 9, David Benavidez. This one is more on the talent than on the accomplishments. He doesn't have yet the pound-for-pound resume, but I do think that there has been some politics that have kind of kept him from that. I think he is a top 10 pound for pound talent guy. And if we're talking talent, he should be, I think, way higher on this list. So this one is a bit more of a projection, but I have him at 9. At 8, Errol Spence Jr. The biggest loss of his career against Terrence Crawford, but I don't think that should knock him off of this list. So I have him at 8. At 7, it is Tank Davis. I think the win over Ryan Garcia looks a little bit better now, considering what Garcia did to Haney, even though there's a lot going on around that fight afterward. I do think that Tank Davis is, I think, clearly one of the best fighters in the world and has the resume to back it up. Ditto for Dmitry Bivol. I think the talent speaks a little bit more than the resume does, but the resume is certainly there to put him on this list as well. Artur Beterbiev has just really controlled things around his weight class, and so putting him in the top five, I think, was pretty easy. But now is where, like, the top four, it's obvious who they are. It's the placement of where they should be that I think is really fascinating. At four, I have Canelo Alvarez. He is the face of boxing. He has been a pound-for-pound king for years and years and years. But moving up aggressively in weight and losing, while it does suck to penalize someone for, as Brian Campbell would say on Morning Combat, daring to be great, he also hasn't exactly faced the stiffest of competition, aside from Munguia, who doesn't deserve to be on this list, but is a very talented fighter. If Canelo does face Terence Crawford, it will be for number one pound for pound. If he faces Benavidez and wins, I think he moves up in that spot as well. But the competition just hasn't been there when we are splitting hairs. This one, it surprised me how many people are moving him up. At three, I have Oleksandr Usyk. I think that, like, obviously the move up from cruiserweight, unifying the belts there, unifying the belts at heavyweight, he has obviously done so much. But I just don't think you can put his resume over the top two guys. At two, I have Terence Crawford. The win over Errol Spence Jr. has locked him into a top three spot in the pound for pound for forever now. Incredibly talented, and just how dominant that win was. You can make a very easy case to have Terence Crawford at number one, but at one, I have Naoya Inoue. What he has been able to do, moving up weight class after weight class after weight class, and showing that the power transfers as he moves up 5, 10, 15 pounds from where we originally saw him, and just how dominant he has been able to be against fighters along the way. The big names aren't there, but that does not limit the accomplishments of Naoya Inoue. I just think he has been so dominant in moving up weight classes and taking on the best at every weight class. Even though they're not the biggest names, they are still the best, and he has dummied them. So I think he is locked in right now, pound for pound, number one. That is going to do it for the show today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We're going to have a lot more wrestling talk as the week goes on, leading up to a big weekend in professional wrestling with King and Queen of the Ring, as well as Double or Nothing for AEW. We're going to continue on with our Canadian Football League previews and, of course, the NBA and NHL playoffs. And I haven't forgot about baseball fans yet. We've taken a bit of a break from that as there's been so much going on, but obviously the schedule is lightening a little bit, and so it's time to focus on how crappy the Blue Jays have been. Make sure you subscribe, whether you're listening or watching. If you are listening, make sure you leave a review. If you are watching, make sure you like and leave a comment. I'm sure I didn't bat 1,000 on what you agreed with on this show today. And I've even got segment ideas out of things in the comments. So give me some of your thoughts in there, and we'll try to build off of that. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Follow me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I will talk to all of you later. Have a great day, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.